Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
I'm here with Brad Hayes. Brad Hayes, so tell me, Mitch McConnell now looks like the big kahuna. Is he?
Yes, I fully expect that he'll be the majority leader. The question, I guess, is in some ways how big. One of the things that of course, he made his mark on as minority leader was being obstructionist, saying that our goal in the Senate, our being the Republicans' goal in the Senate, is to get Obama out in 2012, and which essentially was signaling just opposition, no work towards governance. And I think if you're, you know, trying to conceptualize McConnell moving forward, you want to think a little bit about what his impact will be in governance in terms of policy. And that means that he's going to have to do some things to try to find agreement between the Republicans in the Senate, the Republicans in the House, which is a kind of a different coalition, and a Democratic president, meaning consensus, and the degree to which he can facilitate finding consensus, even on a handful of issues, is going to, in some ways, indicate kind of how big of a kahuna he is.
Like what issues?
I think that there are a handful of issues where there is at least some agreement initially. So we could think about tax reform. Both Democrats and Republicans have talked about their eagerness to reform the tax code.
Do they mean it?
I think they do, because there's quite a bit you could do to change to enhance fairness in the tax code without increasing revenue. And so that would then.
But they have clients. I mean, they have clients, as we say in the business. They have clients who are giving them big money. Well, why are they going to change the stripes now?
Well, because some of the changes that they can make will be favorable to those clients, right? But you can get into kind of standard log rolling agreements in Congress, such that if we make change to corporate tax policy X, we can change family tax policy Y, and I think Republicans would be willing to do that, particularly if you're not, in fact, increasing the overall amount of revenue that's coming to the government. Now, it may seem like we're just, moving around seats on the Titanic, but those things can actually have effects in terms of job growth, money that returns to, working class, middle class families and the like. So I think that is a place where there are opportunities for reform. Another area would be trade policy. There's some agreement on some international trade agreements that they could work on. And there's some interesting areas, Rand Paul has suggested, and there's some agreement on both sides of the aisle for doing some work on sentencing reform, changing our criminal justice system a bit. That would be, I think, particularly interesting because there you have kind of the mapping of libertarian ideas onto more progressive ideas. And so you might be able to find some common ground there. I don't think there's a lot of agreement on many issues, but at least there's a start. And
what about immigration?
I don't see any hope for immigration reform. I could be wrong. I still see no hope, and part because of the House. It's just I don't see that there's going to be any movement in the House, even with more moderates moving into the House. That's going to give John Boehner a little bit more wiggle room in terms of his caucus in the House. I still think that that's a non-starter for the Republican Party, which is particularly problematic thinking about 2016.
And the Hispanic vote.
And the Hispanic vote. One of the things that I'll say, one of the happy parts of the story of the 2014 election for Democrats is that they did well with their own coalition. In other words, they did actually better with women than they did in 2010. And they did better with Hispanics than they did in 2010. Not, these are not huge jumps, but that trend is still alarming if you're the Republican Party, because we know that come a presidential election, Hispanic turnout is significantly higher. And that, of course, we know that the demographic change are only going to increase the power and influence of the Hispanic vote nationally. So they really do need to do some things to change that. I'm not convinced that the coalition is there for them to move forward on that.
Well, we're on the subject. I recently had a very interesting conversation with Deval Patrick. And I made the point that, you know, by having a black candidate for president of the United States, black voters came out in record numbers, so much so that one thinks that the presidential election of Obama, that both presidential elections may have been, you know, very much facilitated by the fact that they had somebody of color on the. And I said, can the Democratic Party ever win again if it doesn't have somebody of color on? You know, he said he thought I had a point. But one wonders whether Deval Patrick, the articulate, brilliant black man who is the outgoing governor of Massachusetts, might find himself as a presidential or vice presidential candidate. He says he will not take a vice presidential nomination.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I don't know if he has the interest in running, obviously, for the presidency. But I think you raise a really important idea for the Democratic Party in that their coalition is increasingly non-white, non-male. And diversity is going to be particularly important there. And so they're going to have to reach out. I mean, Deval Patrick, I think, would be a wonderful running mate for Hillary Clinton. He might not think so. But
he says he won't.
Right. You know, you are going to be looking for somebody with a profile that's going to appeal to your coalition. And that may be somebody that is in a, you know, historically underrepresented group, whether that is an African-American or whether that's a Hispanic-American. I think the Democrats are highly sensitive to that.
So speaking of which, in this last election, the Democrats were running away from black president of the United States in some of these senatorial operations. And there was great resentment on the part of some of the people of color. Was that a mistake?
I think it was a mistake to run away from the president. I don't think you see
but particularly for black voters.
Yeah, I don't think you see those in the numbers, at least if the exit polls are to be believed, that there did not seem to be significant demobilization of the black vote in a midterm election. In other words, those numbers were fairly consistent with what we've seen in the past. Now, as Obama has said, that if you have the same levels of black turnout in presidential elections, that the midterm discourse would be very different, that the Democratic prospects would have been much improved. But we know that all groups participate at lower levels. African Americans, that rate drops off the highest, right?
So
that,
yeah.
And so the degree to which you can shore that up would improve your chances. But I don't think that really created a change that is unexpected for a midterm election.
Yeah. Is this good night for the Democrats, or there are some people who are trying to put a good face on it? You only have 30 seconds to answer.
No, not good night at all. I mean, I one of the things we should never do is say that, okay, because a midterm election, we now know that things are going to be different going forward. Midterm elections are weird. They are consistently weird, I guess, which makes them the norm, but in a weird sense. We're going to see a very different kind of race in 2016, a very different political terrain in 2016, and I think likely a very different outcome in 2016.
Our guest is Professor Brad Hayes. We like to think of him as political scientist in residence here at WAMC. Brad is always brilliant, and we thank you. And Union College is so lucky to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Always great to chat with you, Alan.